Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is in Baghdad today to meet with U.S. and Iraqi officials. His visit comes as the New York Times reports that leaders of Iraq's governing council say they will not reach any formal agreement about a continuing presence of U.S. military forces in Iraq after June 30th. That's the deadline for transferring power to Iraqis. The council says the question of a U.S. military presence will have to wait for Iraqis to reestablish their own sovereignty. U.S. officials, civilian and military, refuse to comment. Managing the deployment of U.S. forces is a tough issue for the Iraqis and for the Bush administration. On this program last week, Slate political columnist Timothy Noah commented that President Bush has inadvertently become a peacenik. This was his reasoning to explain why the president will be avoiding any further conflicts.
Simply put, the president doesn't have the troops, he doesn't have the money, and he doesn't have the credibility.
Counter-opinion now from day-to-day contributor Tim Carney, who is a writer for Evans Novak Political Report.
President Bush has called himself a war president. His critics have pointed out that, nevertheless, the military is as fragile as it's been in decades. Liberals worry, and neoconservatives exult, that this president is taking our nation and our military in a bold new direction. While Bush's doctrine of preemption and his refusal to ask for UN permission slips may be jarring to some, the military today is largely the same one he was left by Bill Clinton. Troop strength has been on a downward slope for years. Consistently throughout the 90s, all branches of the military saw enlistment drop and goals go unmet. But we've been asking these fewer soldiers to do more work. On the day President Bush entered the White House, over 250,000 U.S. troops were stationed overseas in more than 140 countries. In recent years, we've asked them to fight battles in Panama, Iraq, Somalia, Bosnia, Haiti, Kosovo, Afghanistan, and once again, Iraq. Our soldiers are stretched to their limit, but it would be inaccurate to blame President Bush. The problem, like most in Washington, lies not with the elected officials, but with the entrenched bureaucracy. And that is exactly what our military is. When the Department of War became the Department of Defense, that was a sign it was moving from being an occasional factor to a constant presence. The construction of the Pentagon on the banks of the Potomac made it clear. The Defense Department was an institution. Unlike most agencies, the Defense Department at first was doing real work, defeating the Soviet threat that promised to bury us. Once the Berlin Wall fell, however, the Pentagon became just one more bureaucracy in search of a purpose. Madeleine Albright, Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, once asked the Joint Chiefs of Staff, "What's the point of having this superb military that you're always talking about if we can't use it?" So the presidents found some sort of purpose for their superb military. George Bush, the elder, sought to establish a new world order. Bill Clinton sniffed out ethnic cleansing, or WMDs, wherever they could be found or not found. This second Bush has taken all of these causes together. If any of these doctrines seemed unevenly applied, such as Clinton's passivity during the Rwandan genocide and Bush's blind eye to North Korea's weapons, it may be because these doctrines were more rationalizations than policies. George W. Bush is a war president, but given the nature of the bureaucracy that is the Department of Defense, no modern president could be anything else. Since Franklin Roosevelt, they've more or less all been war presidents. And from now on, it looks like that's all we'll ever get.
Opinion from Tim Carney. He's a writer for Evans Novak Political Report.